Blog Talk Radio.
Turn this motherfucking shit up.
You have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food, what he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, "We got a good house here," the house Negro said, "Yeah, we got a good house here." Whenever the master said "we," he said "we." That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick." He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, "Let's run away. Let's escape. Let's separate. That house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school, you nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa.
It's me back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletariat. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You've got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the pastors are doing. That's what the pastors are doing all over the world.
Fred.
Georgia very soon. I asked them, I laid the foundation for our transfer of the Central Committee, Central Headquarters to Georgia. And I said that was the scene of the original crime, the South. It was in North Carolina, Jamestown in 1916, or 1619 rather, I'm sorry, I got it backwards. But approximately 9 slaves arrived there, chained. And this is where the original crime began, slavery. And I think the South then will be the logical focal point to correct the original crime. They say that the criminal is always returned to the scene. And I say in order to correct the original crime, that we must return to the scene. Beautiful. Very beautiful reaction. The people, the victims, the obvious victims. You know, the victim is always a stair step. We have the victim on top of the victim on top of the victim until we reach some threshold we call the oppressor. And in this very complex social order, we find that it's very difficult to pinpoint him, you see? So what we try to do is to improve the conditions of mankind. We find that man's ignorance is really the oppressor. And this is whether it's racism, whether it's class oppression, it's really racism because each thing cuts its own throat. Whether you advocate racism or class oppression, you end up being a victim yourself because the people will correct that and you might be hurt in the process.
But it's a little tougher to make it in Atlanta down there. How about
the next trial? I'm very optimistic about everything. I think the man will survive. As far as my individual life, that all of us, including yourself, you're doomed to death. But the real enemy is that phenomenon that we know nothing about, and that is death that we fight against. That we fight against it with medicine, we fight against it with knowledge, we fight against racism also like that. And this is the thing that we're fighting against. We're fighting against racism, we're fighting against oppression of all kinds, and we're fighting against ignorance. And people who boo, people who fail to understand the problems of humanity, are really very religious because their God is large, meaning their ignorance is large, you see?
Yeah, but my
in other words, that God is not with you.
Uhuru, sisters and brothers, the first thing I want to say is that I love you. And the second thing I want to say is that we can win. We will win our liberation. And in order to win our liberation, we have got to think positively. We have got to believe that we can win. And if we don't believe that we can win, we're whipped before we start. We've got to realize what dangers exist, and we've got to look at those dangers realistically. We can't afford to have a subjective, distorted, irrational fear. We've got to look at the obstacles to our liberation coolly and clearly, and to develop ways to get rid of those for us to struggle, for us to fight for our liberation and for our nation.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. perform like this, perform like this. What shouts you a new weapon? I don't contemplate, I meditate. Then off your fucking head. This that puts the kids to bed. This that I got realness. I just kill shit cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound that engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks and Corvette tire skirt, the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a bitch, you almost probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitch, heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist, burn on side a jellyfish I gauge. See my pedigree, most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I been through probably offend you, this is Parler's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, burners, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. Redemption, scholars, fathers, dead. With kids and I wish I was fed. Forgiveness, yeah. Soldier's DNA, born inside the beast. My expertise checked out in second grade. When I was 9, on sale motel, we didn't have nowhere to stay. At 29, I've been so well, hit cartwheel in my estate. And I'm gon' shine like I'm supposed to. Antisocial, extrovert, and excellent mean an extrovert. And absentness, what the fuck you heard? And passiveness never struck my nerve. And that's a riff gonna be this case. The reason my power's here on earth. Salute the truth and the prophecy. I got love.
So that is to my family, my mother, my father, sisters, my brother, child. They were intended to familiarize them with the situation I was faced with here. Of course, here in prison, we see the repression, the exploitation, the victimization of lower class.
In 61, Jackson was 19 years old, and he received the indeterminate sentence of 1 year to life.
Well, I was incarcerated under a one to life, a term they call for one to life, where I could have done 1 year and been released. I've done 10. That's more time than anybody in this state has ever done on a one to life. I went through all the processes. I tried to get out. I went to school, program, but now on the side, I was studying. Things that I felt that would help the community.
Those on the right saw him as the most powerful threat in the prison system.
I think racism is a control device, control mechanism. Create an atmosphere whereby they can control inmates. And black is just a continuation.
He was the true revolutionary, the black communist guerrilla in the highest state of development.
I'd be the last one to say that Johnson had suicide in mind. I'm certain that Johnson felt that the police would have some concern, would give some concern to the lives of those five civilians. I'm thinking that Johnson was trying to demonstrate to the public, to the people, just how he felt that these problems should be.
Was the incident for which you're charged now, was it a revolutionary act on your part?
You asking me to confess to something?
As unless you wanted to. Did you feel it? Right?
Look, one of the most important elements of guerrilla warfare is to maintain secrecy. I've killed nobody until it's been proven. And they'll never be able to prove anything like that.
Enough, this are the energy. The people them been locking reggae beat. This are not trapping all who feel like them are trapping, really sleeping. And them napping while me flying round the world.
Black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Brother Nat Turner, co-host myself, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and our engineers on the ones and twos, Sister Amina, National Minister of Communication, calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, Black August, Week 5. Before we hop into it, we want to send a special birthday shout-out to our dear brother and comrade, you know what I'm saying, the great and the honorable Chairman Fred Hampton. Black Power, we're going to open up our phone lines to our chairman. Black Power, chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Black Power, chairman, you got the flow.
Right on, yeah. Also want to acknowledge young brother, who did a lot of work in the new Black Panther Party. His birthday also, you know, but the captain Sadiq, formerly the National Chief of Staff for the new Black Panther Party under Crystal Muhammad. We want to acknowledge him too. Chairman Fred, you know, long live Chairman Fred, long live Chairman Fred, you know what I'm saying, straight up. I had a chance to go up to Chicago and take part in this celebration. On the actual block, West Monroe, he was assassinated. It's a cul-de-sac, you know, it is on a cul-de-sac. And Chairman Fred Jr., little Chairman Fred, you know. It's been a while since I've been up there, but it's a birthday celebration that takes place, you know, reference to Big Chairman Fred's dear birth. And, you know, we're going to continue well, the grand finale or the last segment of this Black August month. It's been beautiful, you know, in my neck of the woods, and I'm quite sure around the rest of the country and other parts of the country, the Black diaspora here in America. The hills of North America. You know, Black August is recognized by those of us who, you know, consider ourselves as revolutionaries, conscious, politicized revolutionaries, who believe in liberation. And with liberation, all these other things fall underneath it. We believe that without liberation, then we really, truly can't be free as a people. You know, such things as civil rights and what have you, reform. No man can give you civil rights to tell you when to come and go. Or, you know, whether or not you're allowed in a building or, you know, a moving vehicle, a medical facility, a school, an institution of learning, you know. Civil rights is something that the state can use to continue to perpetuate itself, whether we want to acknowledge that or realize that or not. And so it has always been about our human right to exist on this goddamn planet. on black and brown people are the indigenous people of this earth. We were here first, and we will be here last. You know, so nobody can give us the right. We were given the God-given right to exist, however which way we sought to live. In our, you know, many, 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 many manifestations of groups, nations, or tribes, or whatever you want to call them, you know, in Africa, Asia, even Europe, you know, at a time when there was no such thing or place as Europe, you know, the indigenous people there, black and brown people, you know. We understand root knowledge before fruit knowledge. You know, it's clear. It's not a mirage, but even here in the so-called Americas, what became the Americas, and this shift of this balance of power, this shift in power and understanding. I like to use this word, the lobotomized, you know, that was used in the movie Total Recall. You know, it was an interesting term. You know, to lobotomize someone, you know, mentally, in the shape their minds in the form of a slave, mental, you know, psychological, what have you, as a slave, you know. And that slave, having gotten so engulfed in alien ideals, is totally alien from himself, then he becomes alien to himself and can no longer see himself in the world, see the world through his own eyes, viewing the world through European lenses, which has been one of violence, decadence, dehumanization, which therefore equates into niggas. Because there ain't no niggas. There was no bitches and hoes that came from Africa. You know, there weren't even slaves that came from Africa. You know, it was Africans who were brought here by the force of violence, or the violence of force, and turned into slaves. And due to that inhuman existence, that inhuman experience, naturally will become something other than themselves, almost totally, completely turned inside out, into niggas, into bitches and hoes. And the struggle must continue. The revolutionary struggle must continue at all costs. Frederick Douglass, who I need not to go into or explain who this is, because the average brother and sister has been told and taught about Frederick Douglass, but it's just a quote that sticks in my head, or a quote or two. It said that black people want rain without thunder, or we want to reap the crops benefit without getting our hands and knees dirty. Excellent way to sum up the delusional utopian ideal of freedom, you know, in this country. And I probably won't say this enough. You know, the historical legacy that has been placed before us in terms of leadership. I've heard, you know, coming up in my lifetime, and I'm quite sure others have, think about how can you know where you're going when you don't know where you've been, you know. And we've been so marginalized as a group, placed on the periphery of you know, success or you know, making it. And those of us who do, we manage to slip through the cracks in the sense of a minority that has been placed before us and say, here, these are the people you should model yourselves after. These are the people who you should see as leaders. These are the people you should look up to. You know, without realizing these unseen forces, these hidden hands that have worked behind the scenes. It's really fucked us up, you know, as a people. And so we find ourselves in the struggle, which has to turn into an unconventional, protracted war, a war of attrition on various levels. Let me make this clear. I'm not speaking in the abstract. I accept my position or even my fate in this struggle. If it ain't from the heart, then it's bullshit. It's bullshit. I truly love my people wholeheartedly, with no compromise, unapologetically. I just wanted to say that, and it's an honor to be able to get on such a radio show, a program, and to attempt to raise and heighten the conscious level of my people collectively. I'll settle for 8 out of 10 in the room. I'll settle for 7 out of 10 in the room. 6 out of 10 is heart-wrenching, you know. But people have been placed in positions and conditions which have forced them into a certain types of mentalities. And these mentalities can go both ways, positive and negative. And those positive and negatives can turn out to be the opposite when you look at the steerers of the state machinery. And again, what is the state? The politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police work in a concerted effort to continue what their forefathers established off the backs of black and brown people for free, virtually for free. The launching, the setting up, the organizing, the structuring of the capitalist system in this part of the world. And the reaping of the benefits of that massive exploitation of black and brown people who had worked in the structure of things, who had value, material value, until they had become a surplus population with no material value due to the dismantling of the physical slavery system, which in itself was predicated on rival factions, you know, the so-called North and the South, who themselves had come to blows over how this structure, this capitalist structure, was going to continue to perpetuate itself. Two white factions disagreeing over ideology, yet those same two white factions could not come to blows when it came to black and brown people having and sharing the same economic parity and wealth and power, also militarily, against both of them. You know, it is a natural course of nature that oppressed people be pushed to the highest type of existence, the highest form of themselves under a particular type of system, which leaves them no choice due to the irreconcilable differences with the state, you know, with those who had no intentions on splitting the pie or sharing the pie equally, and not only materially, economically, but in terms of raw naked power, militarily, jurisdiction-wise, a sovereignty, a nation state, where one group has the same amenities that the other group has, or one group has, you know, similar amenities that the other group has, which says that if you try to come in and fuck us over, then we have the same power to fuck you back. You know, clear. So this is what pushes people into a corner, and that to become something other than themselves due to the pressure, to the constraints, the inevitability of being able to continue to exist under something that's so unbearable that it pushes them to the brink, and it transforms them psychologically, and they begin to accept their reality, their lowly, downtrodden, degraded, denigrated reality, and which pushes them into a new phase to recapture their lives back into their own hands. And these is what spark revolutions. And so that is what occurred in what is now known as Haiti, or like some of the brothers and sisters is native, that's native to that region, Haiti or something like that, you know. And the Haitian Revolution, which is what we're going to cap off Black August with, August 22nd, 1791. By calendar date, it's the date following the August 21st rebellion. George Jackson, some refer to it as a massacre, the political assassination, the political murder of George Jackson, you know. And so the Haitian Revolution, which is a gem, it's a gold mine for those of us who are serious, you know, looking back into our existence, our history, our experience with the Europeans, you know, in this part of the world, and it's all right, you know. We're not going to make any apologies for none of this shit. We're not going to feel like we're some isolated case or some way far out topic, you know, that's so far off the fucking Richter scale, you know, it don't register, so way out, you know, like this. You know, what the hell are they talking about? It's very relevant. It is as relevant as the so-called American Revolution that Europeans wholeheartedly honor, unless they wouldn't be here enjoying the fruits of those labors that their founding father, that their great leader in the name of George Washington, you know, to honor him and pay homage and respect to him, even having what's called George Washington Day. And of course, every year, you know, the 4th of July, which Chuck D in a song called Hitler's Day calls the 4th of July a goddamn lie. When did we ever get a piece of the pie? You know, straight to the point. And so the Europeans can celebrate George Washington and the ass kicking that we're told that they gave the British because they wanted to be free and that they wanted to come out from under the despotic rule, the tyranny of the King of England, who had subjected them to tyranny, then we can say the same thing about the fucking French, who had subjected our people to the most cruel, inhumane treatment that one human being can met out towards another. And that this human being is only human in his physical makeup, but a total fucking animal in his actions and his ways and his relation to another group of people for the simple fact that they had darker skin and that they were seen as the perfect source of labor, having been kidnapped from their original homeland and turned into a source of labor where there was no residual return. And so there's a number of factors, you know, that go in to the Haitian Revolution that I hope that I can, you know, do a decent job in bringing across. And of course, any persons who may be listening to this program wanna call and comment, question, you know, and press that one on your phone to get in the queue to be able to get in and you know, express yourself with a question or comment as it relates to this subject, to this topic. You know, this is the People's Radio, In Defense of the People Radio. And we mean that it's not just a slogan, some fancy catchphrase just to promote ourselves, but we really mean that. Now, we don't own CNN and Fox and all the other major stations or even some of these major radio, whatever outlets or whatever. So we have to do what we have to do the best way we know how, to skin a cat in a million and one ways and the sky's the limit. You know, but one factor with the Haitian Revolution, in 1791, there was a recognition on the part of the leadership who, if you're black, you know Black History Month, you know, you generally know Toussaint Louverture, you know, as the leader of the Haitian Revolution. But at this, during the same period, you know, as a matter of fact, about 2 years before the Haitian Revolution, was the so-called French Revolution, which began in 1789. This is due to the inherent contradictions between the aristocrats, the petty bourgeoisie, and of course the poorer whites. And so the French Revolution was a result of these contradictions, and they were heightened. And because of these contradictions were heightened, it pushed the people over the top. And so the aristocrats were subjected to a barrage of attempts at its dethronement, which began in 1789. And the French Revolution went through its cataclysms up to like 1799. And so what was recognized as a result of the contradictions, the French having been the stakeholders, the landholders of Haiti as a colony, that as a result of the French Revolution, it split, you know, persons or people or groups into factions. One group was referred to as the Royalists, and other groups, you know, mentality, the attitude was revolutionary. So you had these same contradictions on the islands in Haiti, in the Caribbean. And so the leadership of the black population, the African descent population there, had recognized that they were in one hell of a situation, and that they seized the time due to the French's weaknesses, And so they decided to strike August 22nd, 1791, Toussaint Louverture. In general, you know, the main players, of course, Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, Henry Christophe, and another figure name is, I believe, is Cudjoe. And when you begin to realize why Toussaint Louverture has been so projected on tours, you know, and you'll realize why these other brothers, leaders who would come on his heels, taking part in the Haitian Revolution, which lasted until 1804. You see, and so they had recognized that the French were vulnerable, that they couldn't hold all these things down at the same time, and it was because of the French Revolution that they saw an opportunity to give an ass whipping to the branch of French who was on the island. And some would have you believe that they were inspired by the French Revolution. Now, I don't know how true that is, but I do understand that it was because of the circumstances, the situation, the French Revolution, and their internal problems. You know, this thing also about democratic reforms, this so-called democracy or democratic state, you know, to overthrow the aristocracy, the petty bourgeoisie, you know, which would be the equivalent of what you see today in America, where you can see the so-called middle class who are now more than ever getting the shaft from the so-called upper class, the white ruling class elites, and then those who on the tier below them, and then the white middle class or the so-called middle class. Just to give you an idea of what the situation was with the French Revolution. And so seizing the time, you know, as Bobby Seale had come to title his book, Seize the Time. And so in the suing process, Toussaint Louverture, who by the way, had been fortunate enough to been able to, or was allowed to actually read, you know, learn and study, you know. And so Toussaint Louverture had studied, you know, what these white people like to get off on calling the classics or whatever, you know. You know what I'm saying? Philosophy or whatever, shit like that. And he had taken that opportunity to learn. And so he was able to benefit from that, and start, you know, instructing and training, you know, the slaves who is willing to get free by any means in guerrilla warfare and what we know as guerrilla warfare today, you know. And so we're talking about the first guerrilla campaign on this side of the world, you know, which led to the so-called second successful revolution in the Americas. And, of course, first successful so-called revolution was the Cagney's defeat of the British. And so as a result of that, the French were ruling elites were overthrown, you know, over a 13-year period, which resulted in the self-liberation of the slaves who had built the French economy. And the French economy, of course, having Haiti as a colony, largely predicated on, if not totally predicated on, sugar and coffee. So we're talking about the sugar plantations, which by the 1760s, Haiti had become the most expensive colony in the Americas, you know. And so they had accumulated massive capital. And, of course, this gold went into the French's, coffers, you know, into their coffers. And they were able to beautify France, you know, the French economy, international trade and commerce. And this is needed to be understood. And this needs to be understood. And the present-day descendants of, in Haiti, and the fact that they were never given any reparations from what the French had accumulated, you know, this aristocratic class, you know, these white elites who lived a life of luxury. Now, when the Haitian Revolution had broken out, it is interesting. You take George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Alexander Hamilton, these so-called founding fathers who had gone through their successful revolution and had been talking that shit about how all men are created equal, under God and whatnot, and all men's natural right to equality and all that bullshit, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and all that rhetoric and bullshit. And but when the Haitian Revolution broke out, they had abandoned that shit. It was no such thing. While at the same time, when the French Revolution broke out 2 years before that, they were with it. And so they you know, they were pro-French, you know. They were pro-French Revolution, you know, thinking that they had something in common with them, similar conditions being ruled by an elite class and whatnot, these terminologies that they like to use, the bourgeoisie, the, you know, the landed gentry, these terminologies that the average Joe and Joanne can get confused with or not necessarily, readily hip to. And that's why it's our responsibility speaking this English language. And it ain't that our people can't grasp this shit. You know, it ain't that our people can't grasp this shit. We grasp the word gentrification due to an experience, due to the experience with the Europeans. So we know what this shit is. You see what I'm saying? And so these terminology that they like to use, though, you know, a serf, someone who's at the bottom of the scale, you know, at the low end of the totem pole, what have you. You know, so these are these whites, you know. So why they were pro French Revolution and talking all that democratic shit, Democrat, Republican Party, what have you. When the Haitian Revolution broke out, they couldn't see the Haitian Revolution, though, which was taking place along the same lines, in a way much more brutal treatment, though, because they were black and brown people. So they weren't having that shit when it came to that. So what does that tell you right there? That lets you know. And man, the same as this thing, you know, this 9/11 shit, you know. So when the Haitian Revolution broke out, shit, them motherfuckers rushed to give support, material support to their white brethren, even though they were called French, you know, to their white brethren. And, of course, this is this time when they were having these contradictions themselves, the British, the French, the Spanish, you know, what have you. You know, they were going through these cataclysms, which would eventually end up in some consolidation, you know. And so they went through their little wars, their little tribal wars themselves, the French, the British, Spanish, and what have you, know, Spain, you know, these motherfuckers who vying for holdings, you know. But when it came to the fucking Haitians, that shit took a back seat, and them motherfuckers was comrades. You know, they received some fucking support, the British, the French, them motherfuckers, like, you know, oh, look, we tripping. These niggas is over here trying to get fucking free. And if we don't stop this, all of our ass could be subjected to shit, because if they get free, then our whole motherfucker that we got going to start getting ideas. And so that's what scared the shit out of these Americans, these white Europeans who was calling themselves Americans. You know, they were thinking about this shit spreading like a cancer over into their neck of the woods in North America. And so they gave material support to their French buddies, to their French land-holding, you know, buddies, who in some cases, these motherfuckers were, you know, Scottish Rite Masons. You know what I'm saying? So they wouldn't have, they abandoned that shit about liberty and freedom and the pursuit of justice and equality. They abandoned that shit. That shit was just on fucking paper. But when it came to niggas, they wasn't having it. That shit was like, you know, man, it had no value to it, period. It had no value to it, you know. And so there's this crisis as a result of the Haitian Revolution that created a crisis, like in a couple of years after the revolution that popped off. And so you see these whites fleeing and shit, you know, in this refugee crisis, who were loaded on boats, and you know, the French naval, you know, naval army, whatever, you know, you know, like you see today, if you've seen Scarface, how the movie comes on, they literally show actual, you know, they use actual real footage, you know, for the beginning of the movie Scarface. You see this boat, you know, look, this shit, you know, the mother of a fleeing Cuba and coming here, you know, landing on the East Coast. You know, they land on the fucking East Coast, you know, that's where they land on the East Coast too, but more upstate, you know, like Virginia, you know, Baltimore, up around there. And these whites had brought, some of them, you know, were able to bring their slaves with them. And so this mixture of whites, so they don't know which white French is coming, because again, the French Revolution had caused some type of ambivalence, some type of anxiety, and so the shit was there. So these mothers come to, they don't know if these whites are coming or pro-revolutionary French revolutionaries, which means these motherfuckers are radicals, or these are royalists who come in here with what was left of their holdings, which was human beings. And so this is how it is, like this shit you see today, this alien and seditions acting on, that's on the books now. That is a result of that. That is a result of it. You know, the sedition acts, alien and sedition acts. You can look them up. This is a result of it. You know, as a result of them fleeing. When the writing was on the wall, you know, and in the meantime, at one point, Toussaint Louverture as the, you know, the leader, the French had brought in some type of commission or something to sort of bargain with Toussaint Louverture to convince him that they were sincere in their attempts to promise change or you know, reform, you know, which we call this no more no less than a loosening of the noose. You know, and this is another reason why Toussaint Louverture is so highly regarded or chosen over the lesser known revolutionaries during this time. There's some who were very critical of him, who was very critical. They would tell you that Toussaint Louverture was compromised. You know, at one point, he had considered that Haiti was still under the orb of the French, simply because of the British, you know, their opportunity to exploit the French's weaknesses. You know, this quasi war with the British, and so even when so-called President Adams had become president, he had you know, put his support, you know, behind Toussaint Louverture. But when George Washington was in office, George Washington wasn't having that shit. You know, Thomas Jefferson, they wasn't having that shit. You know, the strategy of what was referred to as isolation, you know, and to isolate Haiti for strategical purposes, because it wasn't until 1862 that this so-called American government recognized Haiti as a sovereign nation, a sovereign state. And the French didn't recognize Haiti as a sovereign state until 1825. You know, they didn't recognize them until 1825. And of course, like I said, in fear of the possibility of their own human slaves, you know, turn into revolts against Jefferson as a slaveholder, you know, against Washington as a slaveholder. And so, and as a result of that, even Alexander Hamilton, and this is something I want to make sure I point out. Here you have Jefferson on one end of the political spectrum, you know, the so-called Democratic Republican ideology. And on the other end of the political spectrum, you have Alexander Hamilton. And Alexander Hamilton, you know, the leader of the Federalists, you know, this shit about the Federalist Papers and all this kind of stuff, you know. And so here you have these supposedly political adversaries. But when it came to the Haitians, the Haitian Revolution, put that shit to the side. That shit was irrelevant. Hamilton quickly agreed with Jefferson. He had no problem with that shit. He made no qualms about the shit. You know, he both shared that solidarity with the French white ruling class aristocrats who had been the proprietors, the reapers of the benefits of this Haitian colony, French Haitian colony, you know, from which they enriched themselves. And you see that today, the same thing, you know, the same shit. You know, they spar back and forth. The Democrats say all this shit about the Republicans, exposing them on CNN and MSNBC. and then the Republicans exposing the Democrats on Fox, featuring this crazy witch, what her name is, Laura Graham, and Sean Hannity. Now, I don't know what the fuck became. It was a Hannity and Combs. I don't know what then happened to him. You know, but here, and then on Newsmax, you know, on the cable dial, you know, the Republicans are exposing the Democrats, saying that they're practicing propaganda tactics with fake news. And then there's CNN, Anderson Cooper, and all the rest of them playing footage of what some Republican leader or official said and call that fake news. You know what I'm saying? But when it came to Saddam, when it came to Gaddafi, when it came to as far back as even Noriega, you know, Maurice Bishop, the revolutionary leader of the tiny, small region of Grenada, who had been successful in the People's Revolution, a brilliant brother, revolutionary. But when it came to him, you know, when it came to the Taliban in Afghanistan, you know, all that shit went out of the window. So, brothers and sisters, what you need to understand, what we need to understand is that that shit is just entertainment. It's just entertainment, but it works well. It divides people up. It splits them into factions, and that is the objective, their goal, the strategy of instability, the strategy of divide and conquer. You know, to keep ruling. If you look at the stock market, if you look at the how Wall Street, you know, the Dow Jones average and all this type of shit, you notice there's no change when they switch from a Democratically led Senate or what have you, House or President, and when the shit swap back over to a Republican-led House and Senate and President, there's no alteration in it, period. It stays the same. The Fed doesn't change. It stays the fucking same, whether it's a Democrat or Republican. That type of solidarity is the same solidarity that they show with the British, French, or American. You can also look at it like it's the UN, or better yet, NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. You can look at it that way. You know, it's the same thing. That's the precursor, you know, to what you have today. You know, that's the precursor of what you have today. You know, how they support one another when it came to non-whites who were seeking the same prosperity, who were seeking to get on the same level as the French, the British, the Americans. Shit, if you go back and look in the British history, I believe it was King George. Look what happened to King George, if I'm not mistaken. You know, they beheaded him, you know, because they were thinking the same shit. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, these whites, you know, had no problem. They had no problem with these class contradictions. But when they came to non-whites, all that shit went to the curb. You know, they were supporting this nation. They were pro this and pro that. You know? and these are the type of things that we're going to keep saying. We're going to keep saying to our last breath. To our last breath. You know, that when the Europeans had their little internal squabbles, nothing supersedes their ultimate solidarity, being the minority on the earth, being the minority. They recognized it then, and they recognize it now. They had no problem no problem at all when it came to nine whites. This Anglo-American-led coalition, you know, of the white minority people on the earth, their leadership, and these whites who are the willing, easily, you know, this thing is based on social Darwinism. You know, named after Charles Darwin. You know, this white boy who gets to write about, you know, he's looking at the origin of humanity, whatever. And, you know, he said that it was the fucking black man, basically. You know, the light began in Africa, the African black man, blah, blah, blah. And then these other things that had come along over the years by people who had also been his contemporaries, you know, and then those who followed him. And began understanding these things about race mixing, the genetic disparities in blood mixing, you know, black and brown indigenous people on earth and their ambitions about expansionism, you know, voyages into unknown parts of the world and you know, on a larger scale and coming in contact with people who were genetically superior to them. You know, and so therefore their whims to rule other parts of the world and establish themselves as the Lord, which of course called for later genocidal tactics, genocide against those who they sought to dominate. One of the leaders I spoke at also was Dezzeline. When you look at Dezzeline's track record when it came to the Haitian Revolution, when the French had pretty much reached the end of their rule, there was also an attempt to, you know, to recapture their former colony, or in the waning stages of the two, what some people say, put up a last gasp or whatever, a last front to hold on. Well, Dezzeline had recognized this as the success of Louverture. And so he had developed a policy with the remaining whites, you know. And he was like, shit, execution, you know. So he called for the execution of those remaining whites, you know, who tried to reconquer Haiti, you know, under Napoleon, you know. that's another name we don't have to grapple with. No, shit. We've heard of that name, Napoleon. You know, some of us, if not all of us, most of us, have heard of what's referred to as Napoleon complex. Napoleon being a short, small man, you know, so you got little brothers, short brothers or small brothers, you know, whatever, a dwarfish or whatever, you know, what's called the Napoleon complex. So that's where it came from Napoleon. So they tried to you know, make another run at it. And so Dezzeline wasn't having it. And we can say that Dezzeline had a sort of a Nat Turner mentality. You know, when you try to, you know, get black people to see these types of things, you know, it's a segment of us that have a problem with that. you know, two wrongs don't make it right, you know, what have you, you know. How to you know, to annihilate a group of people and you be the descendant of what's left of them, and during that time and stage, they're looking at this shit like, look, these people will do the same shit to us if we don't deal with them right here and right now. They'll try to make a fucking comeback. You could never get the Europeans to go into Iraq. And if they had the chance to wipe out every last goddamn member of Al-Qaeda and ISIS, you cannot get them to understand. You could not go to them and tell them two wrongs don't make it right. You cannot go to them and tell them that it is wrong, that it is evil, if they had the opportunity to kill every member of Al-Qaeda. Got them right before their very eyes, that they will pass that opportunity up. As is deranged, as mad as the average U.S. Army soldier, especially a white one, especially a white one. A lot of those white soldiers went out there to Iraq with blood in their eyes. They were thirsty, kills under their belt, onto their track record. Like that white boy, they made the movie, the American Sniper. Can't think of his name right now. But yeah, they would not play that shit. But to play on our minds and say, oh, how cruel, how savage, how vicious, how inhumane that Nat Turner was, that Dezzeline was. And yet somehow, some kind of way, the same whites catch selective amnesia and cannot see the fact that they are the inheritors of that same type of savagery. Straight up. And I challenge anybody on the earth to prove otherwise. And they can be black too if they want to. Let them have that. And so this was Dezzeline's mentality, because he experienced these savage ways of the French. The other lesser known figure, Henri Christophe, you know, the French, you know, will pronounce his name as Henri Christophe. And so Henri Christophe was instrumental in the confiscation of what is known today as the Dominican Republic. He was a military genius. A high-ranking military genius who rose to the ranks. And so the success that he had displayed in the Haitian Revolution and the aftermath, you know, I believe Henri Christophe had become the first monarch, you know, who had established himself in the North. And so these are the other brothers who have not been given as much as attention as Toussaint Louverture. Now, when the defeat of the French, of course, that meant the slaveholders, the slave owners had lost their holdings, which meant economic an economic crisis. And lo and behold, years later, and that's even today, even in modern times, you know, the continual paying of reparations to the French on the part of the Haitian government. It's amazing, you know, and none of these same people who declare themselves to be Christians could see nothing but themselves, you know, and similar, no different than what happened with the British and their so-called abolishing of slavery. I think it was around 1801, somewhere up in there. And so the British's abolishment of slavery, you know, and instead of the slaves being reparated, the slave owners were reparated for the loss of property and the pursuit of happiness. And so come to find out, the moneyed interest from which they had been reparated was from the Rothschild family, who, of course, at that time had been the world's most powerful bankers. And a lot of people don't understand, a lot of people don't really realize this, too, and I'm going to make sure I don't forget this, but a lot of people have no idea that the Rothschild family had saw war as a profitable business, you know, to finance both sides, or at least one side. You know, then the bet against the other side, you know, like the Battle of Waterloo. Look that up, Rothschild and the Battle of Waterloo, you know. And it's sort of like it's one of the movies, that was made in the early 70s. I'm thinking it was Uptown Saturday Night. Sidney Poitier and I think Richard Pryor, where they had rigged up a boxing match and got everybody to sway this way. But it's the way they did it, you know, to convince, you know, those who were placing bets that he was the sure winner. And so they, you know, flipped the script and were able to make money that way. I think from where Biggie had gotten his name from, Biggie Smalls was in that movie, I believe. You know, they had ripped off Biggie Smalls, you know. But it's the same tactic. It's the same strategy. It's a Hegelian tactic. It's a Hegelian strategy. And so that profited from these revolutions, the American Revolution, you know, and the French Revolution. And so the crucial part about that is when you have you take the Haitian Revolution in the consideration, what do you get? You know. Now, you know, wars have to be financed. And who knows that better than the Rothschild family? Even today, who knows that better than them? Okay. So with the Haitian Revolution, Napoleon and his gang, the French, they had to have financed their war. And so what basically is basically this year, you know, when you call in your loans and you're not able to meet that loan, what happens? If you're like somebody who, you know, made a loan or, you know, to buy a house. And so when the bank calls in his loan, what happens? That's the same tactic. And as a matter of fact, that is pretty much what it's about, keeping people in debt as part of the capitalist scheme. But the thing about that is it's imploding. is imploding because of the inherent contradictions of capitalism, the internal contradictions of capitalism. And as a matter of fact, this is the reason why he will never tell you, but this is the reason why Joe Biden just relieved all student loans, well, you know, X amount of whatever level of student loans. But they're not going to tell you the true reason why he did it. But on the surface, what he's doing, he's trying to score brownie points with the people, especially the youth. But they're not going to tell you because of the due to their internal crisis that they're suffering from, that they're forced to take this route, lest the people start rebelling. And that's what happens. As a matter of fact, that's how you can create an artificial revolution. They've also done that. So with Napoleon, with the French, portfolios. And so when they called in, as long as they weren't able to meet it, then they had to come up with something. That's what you call collateral today. You know, what you putting up for collateral? Well, I'm putting up my house. Well, I'm putting up my car. Well, I'm putting up my diamond ring, you know, that was passed down to me from my grandfather, whatever, or, you know, the diamond ring that I placed on my wife's finger that was passed down from my great-grandmother. You know, that's what you call collateral. And so the French got their holdings. So they decided to give up Louisiana. And that is the true story of the Louisiana Purchase. It was caused as a result of the Haitian Revolution, a guerrilla campaign that was carried out, which, as I said, had already been having internal issues, internal problems in France, dealing with the French Revolution. And so the bankers called in their loan, and they had to meet those loans. And so they met it with the Louisiana Purchase. That is how it got to be part of this shithole. And that's a fact. Because of the Haitian Revolution. Yeah. Now, if you want to be so blunt, yeah, it was because of a bunch of niggas, a bunch of brilliant niggas who was determined to win their lives back into their own hands, that the French elites had to give up something. And that is why they tried to a last-ditch effort to get it back because of the economic wealth that it possessed in the sugar and coffee industry. Something which the Caribbean was known for. And so the French have never forgotten that ass whipping. Sure as I speak today, Now look at Haiti today. It is a result of the continual attacks in the so-called Western Hemisphere, you know, a satellite of the Americas. There's no disentanglements here. You know, 1791 is the same as 1991. It's the same as the 90s with Bill Clinton. If you look at Aristide, come the people's chant in Haiti. And, of course, Aristide had rejected capitalism in favor of communalism, something that African people have always lived with as an ideology. You know, you got capitalism, socialism, kind of whatever, you know, fascism, right? And so if you take what happened to Aristide in Haiti, orchestrated effort, a synthetic revolution, an overthrow, a kidnapping, orchestrated by the CIA, a group known as FRAC, the acronym, pretty much cannibals, the cannibals, and what they were able to do to keep Haiti in instability. Why? Because of what? Could it be because of oil reserves? Could it be because of that? And of course, letting back in of the French through certain types of diplomacy, through certain types of shenanigans, through French interests as a former colony. And that's what you have today. And, of course, the earthquake that took place years ago. And, of course, you know, there are those of us who learn things, you know. And I tell you, you know, it's kind of it can be heart-wrenching sometimes because of the way that our minds have been shaped. You know, the way that our minds have been programmed to think, you know. There's this thing about we only exercise certain percentage of so much of our brain that if we can tap into the other percentage of our brain and we can, you know, we can escalate our thought process and come out from underneath, you know, this sort of mind control, social engineering, brainwashing that we had. But what I'm trying to say is, that those of us who don't believe that the Haitian earthquake was a natural disaster, you know, we believe that the Haitian earthquake was a synthetic earthquake by the U.S. military using a program known as HAARP. Not the HAARP that you see on the television, you know, with the Medicaid or whatever, you know, with the elderly. Not that HAARP, but another program known as HAARP. Let me see if I can high active aurora something program, radio something program. In other words, where they can take radio frequency waves, shoot them into the air, and make them bounce off something like the ionosphere or whatever, and it bounces off and reflects, bounces off back downward, and you can target a specific region. And this is the type of technology now that they have. Now, the Russians have been on to them for decades, you know. But I saw a graph. I can't think of this person's name, but he had been studying this stuff. He's into this radio microwave technology shit. He probably spends his whole day, whatever. But anyway, and of course, you know, it can't be like something where you're just stumbling upon shit. Of course, there's always whistleblowers, there's always people on the inside, people, you know, connect these white boys are connected, you know, way much more easier than some, you know, African or, you know, Latino or somebody trying to investigate and dig and expose their people to it. But he shows where you can actually determine through certain machinery when the heart program is being is turned on. It's sort of like when you're in the hospital and you know they got you hooked up to the machine and it, you know, I can't think of the official term, name for this machine, but you know, they show you your heart rate and the little thing, you know, is going up and down, you know, whatnot, stuff like that. Okay, it's a graph like that. And there's these little things that move like a little meter thing, like the old stereo with the tweeters, you know, the little thing that's moving. And so it's similar to that. And so he shows like a 3A like kind of like thing, like during the week before and when the Haitian earthquake is taking place, and then after. And so what he and to my knowledge, there's been nobody that stepped forward has refuted him. So on this graph, it shows, you know, the line is like low, 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 low. And then the day of the Haitian earthquake, right before it, you see the thing shoots up. You know, it's hot. That he's saying that their heart program was turned on. And it covers the time period right before the Haitian earthquake and then after. And then you see the line goes back down as it was in the beginning. And there's this graph. You know, and so some people can call, you know, they use these terminologies, names of expert, you know, some what have you, you know. But he has clearly, he's written, he's, you know, he's shown, he's, you know. But of course, this is not the type of stuff that's going to make CNN. I mean, you know, Anderson Cooper not going to, you know, whoop Bliss as bad as he is. Even Sean Hannity, you know, what are they, Democrats and Republicans? You ain't going to see it on Oprah. You ain't going to see it on Wendy Williams. You know, you ain't going to see it on none of that. You know, but all I'm saying is, and it's no coincidence, it's so many things. It's one of the brothers in the Nation of Islam, you know, he's at the stage now where, you know, he speaks like Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad used to speak, you know, when he was in the Nation, you know. And he has a piece where he talks about the Haitian earthquake himself, and he goes into it, you know. And so what was the whole purpose of it? Because it had been the oil reserves that was found in Haiti, you know, to tap into these, you know, these fresh oil reserves. And so the strategy of instability, destabilization, that's it. You know, the strategy of destabilization, you know, that's used. You know, when you want to conquer a nation, over is because your geologists or you snuck some people into a land or whatever, or you know, these operations, you know, CIA type groups or what have you. Then there's a concept, there's a strategy called destabilization. So you go in and destabilize that country's government, its economy, you create a crisis. Especially if there's a leader that's there that doesn't want to go along with the ambitions of Washington, you know, the agenda that comes out, that supposedly supposed to come out from Washington D.C., you know, the mandate that comes out from the crack house. What they mistakenly refer to as the White House. And here you have a leader who does not acquiesce to American whims. And so there's several ways you can use things you can do to topple his government or her government. You know, even so where the opposition that CIA has always supported, when they, once they place them in office, and there's a tendency sometimes where the person was the opposition, then he began to wake up, and then they turn on him. And so the same shit, you know. But the Haitian earthquake, we don't believe was a natural disaster. We believe, as a result of the evidence that's there, that they used the HEART program, that they used HEART to destabilize Haiti, to keep Haiti in constant static and conflict. The Machiavellian strategy tactic of every night again create an enemy and then take him down, and the people will throw themselves at you, will fall right into your arms because you saved them, not realizing that you, the Frankenstein, and Frankenstein at the same time. No. And so this is what happened to Haiti. And so, of course, the Europeans, even these so-called aid groups that had went into Haiti, especially the Christian ones, what did they go there for? They went there with food programs and were trying to proselytize. And the Haitians were like, look, I need food. I don't need no Bible. I don't need Jesus. I need food. And so they were trying to convert them, no different than what they were doing when they went into Africa in the 1880s, you know, the proselytize. And so what did they do? They would not give the, you know, they would hold the Haitians hostage. And this is reported in the news wire. You know, there's a number of things. Children having been so-called adopted by whites. You know, these programs. But it's no coincidence that the second that this earthquake hit, the U.S. military just happened to be there, just happened to be offshore. Wow. You know, how lucky they are. You know, the whole planned operation. But due to the constraints, you know, the chain and lock around our brains collectively, the people, we find that fantastical. We find it fantastical to believe such a thing, you know. And at the same time, each and every one of us, all collectively, the average brother and sister, when he or she was a boy or a girl, was told about the devil, how evil the devil is. He's an evil genius, and that there's no good in him, and that he's willing to do whatever he has to do to turn you out to whatever mechanation or machination, whatever you want to call it. You know? And this is the legacy of the Haitian Revolution. There's no disruption there. It was never those severed ties. You know, it was all because of that. And the continual confiscation of Haiti. And of course, the other thing you have to take into consideration is a depopulation program. You know, this Malthusian philosophy named after some white boy named Thomas Malthus. Some people might pronounce it as Thomas Malthus because it's Malthus, like thus, you know. A British so-called populationist who was contemporary with his British economist in the name of Adam Smith. And so a concerted effort as the descendants of those ideologists to, on one end, to be economic superior to black and brown people, while on the other end, commit to a depopulation program due to the fact that the Europeans are the slowest growing group on the earth, that they suffer from what's called zero growth population. And so therefore, in order for them to exist, then black and brown people must suffer. A depopulation program. And of course, due to the situation in Haiti, you know, the lack of what they like to refer to as quality health care, You know, you see these disparities by these sociologists, these white apologists, sociologists who write these books and you know, documents and stuff, whatever. Shoot, documentaries even. To explain why Haiti is the way it is today. And a planned coup against Aristide. And the one other thing that should be mentioned about the Haitian Revolution is that it wasn't all physical. That there were also a spiritual foundation, a spiritual how should I put it? To light the fuse, and not only light the fuse, but to keep the fuse lit once it was lit. And so in that part of the Americas, they were not able to totally break us or break us 99% or 95%. You know, we were able to hold on to a lot of our indigenous worship and spiritual practices and rituals and customs that we had brought with us from Africa. And Hollywood's job was to do what? Was to villainize it. So what Hollywood did was would make this movie, this one particular movie that stuck out called The Serpent and the Rainbow. And so what was that all about? Oh, to portray Haitian voodoo, you know, in a very negative light. You know, to scare black people away from their own belief systems, spiritual practices, and power so they can flee over to Christianity, you know, to a white Jesus. And the funny part about that is that the Catholic Church, Catholicism, adopted some voodoo practices. Now, I said hoodoo. Voodoo practices. But that was one of the things that our ancestors used that was vital in their success in the Haitian Revolution. Another lesser known one, Santeria. A particular type of fighting style. And I sometimes I have trouble trying to pronounce it, but capoeira. Yeah, I think I got it right that time. You know what I'm saying? But these are the things that we practice, rituals, you know, placing certain types of body paint, you know, knowing the vital parts of the body, you know, for protection, you know, utilizing the whole repertoire. So much so that that at one point when they were receiving help and they had brought in this so-called badass, you know, from Europe to go in and, you know, put down a revolution, squash the rebellion. And there's a book that has been made from his diary that he kept. And his diary, in his diary, I read some of this, it was fascinating. You know, and he had said that the Haitians were so proficient in their guerrilla campaign that the Europeans couldn't even come close to dealing with it. You know, I mean, they were at a loss. And so much so that they would, you know, the way he's describing how, you know, what's called a hit-and-run tactic, you know, hit-and-disappear tactic, you know, hit and harass and disappear. You know, so much so it seemed like they just disappeared under the ground, you know. And so this was turned into a book. The Europeans published this as a book. And he also kept that and said how cruel the French was, how inhumane the French was during this time. Not only doing it, but escalated, all because one group of human beings, the same freedom that they had. And they were willing to make the sacrifice for the future generation. And so therefore, we celebrate the Haitian Revolution. It is our right. It is our right to be free as human beings on this planet. Our human right, by any means necessary, to win back our humanity as human beings. You know, so on that note, we say tune in next week for, you know, another show. You know, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern time. To In Defense of the People Radio, brought to you by People's Political Party. One of your hosts, Chairman of the People's Political Party, Nat Turner, and proudly so. My co-host, Brother Motherland, Minister of Defense, and our technician, our assault technician, our National Minister of Communication, Sister Hammond Oshun. And we also call on Oshun as well as Ogun, you know, to keep us, protect us, and guide us, and continue to give us knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to be revolutionaries in our quest for our liberation and making our contribution. And on that note, we say Black Power, Yahuru, and all power to the people.